Welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, and this podcast is your guide to start creating a lifestyle by design. From entrepreneurship, money and finance, taxes and residencies, and everything in between, this show highlights the nuances of a true global citizen lifestyle. Let's dive in. Panjo, welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I am so excited to have you on today. So before we dive into all things digital nomad, travel, personal finance, I would love to hear a little bit more about your journey, your story, where you started, and how you got to where you are today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today as well. I'm originally from Barbados. I did all my education in Barbados. I'm actually a qualified accountant. So I went to university here in Barbados, did a degree in accounting, then qualified as a British qualified accountant. Now I'm also a fellow of that association. Somewhere in my mid to late 20s, I then migrated to Guernsey in the Channel Islands for work. And pretty much that was like maybe 17 plus years ago. Since then, I've pretty much lived mostly outside of Barbados in 5 different countries. I continue to work as an accountant. Somewhere in between there, I also started maybe 2 or 3 businesses, including a consulting finance company as well for myself, and done a bunch of travel, circled back, and I'm back now working for myself, self-employed. More of a digital type person, still working on the digital nomad aspect of that. But I mostly spend my time now on personal finance as opposed to some of the big corporate work I used to do before. In my corporate life, I pretty much built up a reputation as a budget guru. And I pretty much spent most of my days doing budgeting and forecasting for large corporations, including construction companies, which included new hotel builds. So somewhere in between those years, I was also a hotelier, and I've spent my time working in 4 different countries as a hotelier, which means I've lived in hotels for sometimes 3-4 months on end. I've lived on construction hotel, a construction site for a hotel as well. So there's a lot there and a lot of travel and a lot of movement.
That's awesome. I love that. I live out of mostly Airbnbs full time. I could not imagine living out of a hotel full time. Most hotels don't have, you know, the kitchens, the pots, the pans, like everything that's really needed to live a daily life. So I'm sure there was a struggle in that as well.
There is like a whim and a wham. Because I work primarily for luxury hotels. Who doesn't want to live in a luxury hotel? So it's nice to live in a luxury hotel. You get up every morning and the view is amazing. Because I've lived in St. Lucia, in Antigua, in Bermuda. You have fantastic views. However, you lived in a hotel for long periods of time, there's only so much hotel food you can eat. And that's one of the first things that I really start to get, like, I cannot eat this food anymore. Primarily, most of them are not necessarily like self-catering, but I have lived in self-catering hotels before. Primarily because specifically that one, the hotel was actually closed for renovations. So they allowed me to live in the penthouse. So that was okay. I've had another instance where this particular one, it was on a construction site, but they did have some of the rooms that they didn't demolish yet. And I got so tired of their food one day, I literally went to the hardware store, bought a hot plate, bought pot. And I just cooked from my room every day. I mean, obviously, I'm not telling people to do that in a hotel. You cannot do that in a functioning hotel. But yes, live in. And then the thing is, if you live in a hotel, especially a nice hotel, it's nice. There are benefits to it. But if you live in a hotel permanently that you work for, then you have no privacy. And I think that that's the worst part of living in hotels. Because on Saturdays, you don't get an off day. Every day there's someone knocking on your room to say, this needs sorting, that needs sorting. You know, you're a senior, I'm the head of the finance department. So they don't care what's my off day. They're going to knock on that door. But yeah, you do get up for nice views.
The nice views make it worth it. I mean, that's an amazing journey as well. And I'm sure that brought you to where you are today. So all part of the story. So there's so much to dive into here. But before we get into it, I want to ask you what it was like for you from, I would assume, a fairly young age to leave your home country and potentially leave with the intention of not returning for quite a while, and what that looks like for you.
For me, I think it's something that from the time I was a child, I always knew I was going to do. I've recently written the book, and at the beginning of the book, I talk about my childhood and how I spent a lot of time in my childhood at a luxury hotel here in Barbados because, you know, family members and everybody used to work for it. It was near my district, and I spent a lot of time there as a child. So I knew of hospitality. I knew of travel. I knew what tourists looked like. I knew that outside world. So from a very young age, I always knew this was what I wanted for myself. I had my first airplane ride at 8 years old, so I was hooked on travel. So I've already had like travel. So as I went through my schooling, knowing I wanted to be an accountant from 14 years old, I chose that. But I also went through my schooling and my young age knowing I was going to leave. It was always on my agenda that I was going to leave. So it wasn't like I got to a certain age and then I had to make this big decision about whether or not I want to go. And then I was all panicking about it or whatever. You know, you at a young age, you may have persons around you who may have their caution or their own fears. And they try sometimes to put that fear on you. And I've had that situation where, you know, older persons may have tried to put that fear of the outside world and, you know, going out there on your own at a young age, et cetera, et cetera. But I never had that fear. Prior to that, I'd also left and went to live in a neighboring island, Trinidad and Tobago. So I'd lived in Trinidad for a couple of months as well as a student. So I'd already also had the experience of living outside of my own country, living among other persons for an extended period of time. But by the time I started to travel for work, I was already traveling the Caribbean on my own. I was traveling on my own from the time I was like 22 years old. So I didn't have that fear.
I love that. That's so interesting. And that's such a unique upbringing, I think. And maybe it's more common in the Caribbean because I'm sure there is a lot more travel between different countries there. But I find that so interesting. No. Okay.
It actually isn't. And that's one of the things about the path that I have taken. Because, you know, I've worked in Guernsey and those places, and it's very difficult when I work outside to meet people who've not done a gap year, to meet people who've not done extensive travel. I will not find those persons among myself in Barbados or within my own circle. So while we have islands that are very close to each other, and yes, you know, there is a certain sector of the population who grew up traveling to neighboring islands, we're in a position now where it's very difficult to get to neighboring islands because there just isn't the airlift. And it's sometimes more expensive to go to a neighboring island than it is to go, say, to go to Miami. But the whole concept of leaving at that age to be out on your own terms. Like, I mean, like years ago, what the Caribbean does know is migration. We all know of persons who've left to go to Canada, to go to the US, to go to England to make a better life. So we've all grown up with either a parent, a cousin, an aunt, or someone who traveled overseas for a better life. But to just say, oh, I'm going traveling and I want to be a nomad, I want to be everywhere, that's something that's just not the same.
I feel like that whole concept of traveling somewhat full-time and being nomadic is slowly on the rise now, especially mm-hmm. since COVID, but hasn't been too mainstream in the past. So I could see that happening, but that's a very interesting upbringing on your end of knowing from such a young age that you wanted to travel. I don't know too many people who have that mindset from such a young age and knowing that they are not going to spend the rest of their life in the country where their family, their friends, their entire upbringing is. So that's a really interesting backstory to your beginning. So let's talk about the travel and personal finance aspect of things. I love talking about finance, personal finance specifically. So you have traveled to many, many countries solo. Mm-hmm. What are some of the lessons and takeaways that you have learned in terms of travel, of course, because we talk about that on the podcast, but also in terms of finance? And what did that look like for you? What were some of the lessons and takeaways that you learned from other countries, cultures, and just from traveling solo yourself?
So in terms of travel and funding travel, for me, because I knew that this was a lifestyle that I always wanted to engage in, I've always been very strict or mindful of my personal finances, and I keep good records and budgeting. I'm very big on budgeting. So one of the things that I always say, you know, people say, how do you plan to go on trips like this? you start with a budget. I mean, I did a round the world trip where I was on the road for like 6-7 months, and I kept a massive spreadsheet of every cent I spent in all those months in all the different countries in the different currency converted back. So before I started, I sat down and I did my research in terms of how much does it take to live in a particular location. And knowing that, I was able then to build out a budget before I actually left. So if the estimate was that it's $40 or $30 per day in XY country, then if you know you want to spend 30 days, then you know how you need to rate that out. You add your accommodation, you add your travel. And then, you know, you have to add things for like souvenirs. And one of the things I did with the round the world trip is I would say I'm going to allow myself one big activity in each of the locations. So like in South Africa, I went to Kruger National Park. In Singapore, I went to Formula One. And, you know, sometimes if you're in Asia, you're going to have, you're going to have your cheap meals, et cetera. But you should also budget for one nice meal in the location. So these are different things of different ways of how you can manage your money in terms of making certain that you have enough money on the road. And that's for persons who are not necessarily earning on the road, but they're just doing travel. Or even for persons who are earning as digital nomads, you still want to make certain that you're earning enough to suffice yourself and that you have enough for emergencies. Now, emergencies are going to happen. Whether you are traveling or whether you're living at home, emergencies is always something that's going to happen. So you should always have an emergency. That's something I talk about in personal finance all the time. Now, because of the way the world is working, I'm an advocate for persons to have an emergency fund that looks like it's a lot heavier than in the past. In the past, your emergency fund was supposed to help people, whether you had, like something like a tire was needed fixing and stuff like that. But you also need to have a certain level of emergency fund in event that you've lost your job. How long does it take me to get another job back? And that will determine like how much money you want to have for your emergency fund. When you start to travel, you're going to have the same thing. Sometimes, maybe not of your own accord, you're going to end up in a location longer than you have to be. Like I got stranded in Australia for a whole week on New Year's Eve day. And that's the busiest time in Australia. There was no accommodation. And in moments like that, you have to find additional funds to be able to provide housing and accommodations, et cetera, for yourself. Even in terms of medical, you may have medical insurance as you're traveling around, but you don't necessarily know the location of the country that you are going to be in. And what is it going to be the criteria? Are they going to ask you to pay up front? Or, you know, how is that going to work? You don't want to be in a position where you need medical attention and you're trying to say, oh, I need to call my insurance company who's 3 hours ahead of me or 4 hours behind me or something like that. You want to be able to suffice. So those are things that give you a bit of comfort while you are on the road. In terms of what I have learned on the road, as it relates to money or what I've seen, now I would say that one of the things that always stay with me, after I'd spent maybe 3-4 months in Asia on my round the world trip, one of the things that I started to really more believe in was my journey on self-employment. You know, you get up in Asia every day, you walk around and you see individuals with way less maybe educational experience than you have, and they're making a go of it. The entrepreneurship skills that I saw in Asia really give me the determination that when I had finished travel and returned, my whole thing was like, no, I'm going to work for myself. I mean, that was always something that I had from a young age also said I wanted to do. But it was something that I always felt that I would do with my 9-to-5. Like when I left university and, you know, back then it used to have like a mission statement. My mission statement basically said I wanted to be the chief financial officer of a major company and a small business owner. So I've always felt like, you know, this was something that I would do. But after like the all the time in Asia, then I'm like, no, you see so many people, and whether they're creatives or not, just making a hand of working for themselves and being successful at it. I mean, they work hard, but they're successful at it. And that was one of the things then that I definitely brought back with me, that entrepreneur type skill. well, I wouldn't say skill, because at the time it wasn't a skill. It was more of a, what should I say, a focus that I wanted. Like, this is what I want to pursue.
That is so interesting. Thank you for sharing that. So in you saying that, I'm curious, when you went to Asia and when you saw all of these entrepreneurs doing the thing for themselves, building something for themselves, was that mostly foreigners who were living in Asia, enjoying the lifestyle? Was it locals who had businesses there? Where did that inspiration really come from?
No, it was mostly locals. I mean, I'm not new to the self-employment or entrepreneurs type scenario. I grew up with that in my family. You know, there are lots of members in my family who've owned their own businesses in Barbados, etc. But what I found in Asia is that while it is seen as such a big task to step out on your own, in the Caribbean or in Barbados and say, I'm a business owner, I'm going to open a business, I will rather be self-employed than have a 9-to-5. While it is seen as though, oh, you know, they're like, if you, whenever you say that's where you want to embark, especially many years ago, there will always someone to give you the counter. Oh, but you're not going to make it. Or, oh, it's so difficult to own your business. Or, oh, you know, there has always been that. That, I must say, is changing a lot now. And a lot more now, because people realize that jobs that they thought were stable aren't stable anymore. Because before, you know, like a government job was seen as the ultimate. And persons were like, why would you want to do that? Just go get a job working here. Or just go get a job working there. Whereas now people are, you know, more embarking on it. But in Asia, it's not necessarily of a Pacific background. It is like you see it, I think, in just large more numbers of local people actually working for themselves. I think in terms of the ratio of how many local businesses, you know, whether it's just like food operations, you know, all these little one door, one man, mom and pop type little restaurants that we pop into and get good food, et cetera. You just see so many more persons who are out there just doing self-employment.
That is a very interesting insight. And you're so, you hit the nail on the head. And I've never thought of it that way. But now that you mention it, it's very interesting, because I find in growing up in Canada, at least, that what you mentioned in the Caribbean of how there's always some hesitation or don't do it, or there's something more stable, was also very prevalent, at least, you know, back in the day. I don't know if that is exactly how it is now, per se, with some mindset shifts. But when I lived in China, I saw there were so many small local businesses. And you're right, you know, the mom and pop shops, the convenience stores, the restaurants, the selling the school uniforms, whatever it may be, like so many are popping into my mind right now. And it's just a very different, and I would say more corporate atmosphere, in at least in Canada and America. Whereas it's so true. If you have spent extensive time in Asia, I think anybody will see that just walking down the street. It's a lot less big conglomerates and a lot more of the locals who are doing something for themselves.
I know there's a hustle aspect to it, you know, and I talk about that aspect when I talk about personal finance, that a hustle is not necessarily a long-term strategy. A hustle will feed you for a day. A hustle may feed you for a good few years, but a hustle, you know, is something that is very fickle. You could have it today and you could not have it tomorrow. So I know that some of what they're doing is out of that hustle mentality and out of a necessity of a need to just earn a living. But at the same time, I think for me, they make it happen. They don't necessarily have the conditions in the best conditions. And I think that that's the part that I more look at, because, you know, like on this side of the world, or sometimes we always feel like we need to have the perfect this. We need to have the perfect logo. We need to have the perfect setup. We need to have this before we can embark. It just gives you that spirit that, if you were doubting yourself and thinking, oh, I don't have what it takes to start a business, or I don't have the right this, or I need to get this, or I need that particular help, then it just gives you the motivation that, like, no, you don't. You can just get started. You can start. You can start from there and build.
That's so true. You know, I know so many business owners and people who want to be business owners in North America, and they need to get the logo perfect and the branding right. And I was just talking about this with my partner the other day. And I was like, because when I started this journey quite a few years ago, I had that same mindset. And now I am in it and I really see it for what it is. And I see other people doing this now and needing to have everything perfect before they get started. And it's like the perfection and what you need and the branding and the logo will come, but you need to get the business first. And the business is what's most important, the marketing, the sales, whatever that looks like. And they don't care. As long as you have the advice and the expertise, they don't care what your logo looks like. And that is really just the honest truth, especially when you're being scrappy and you're starting.
And those are things that you can fix and improve on as you go along.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, that's a very interesting insight. Thank you for sharing that. And I mean, I'm sure we could talk all day about the other insights and what else you learned and gleaned from your time traveling the world. But I want to ask you, so in your book, you talk all about personal finance. What are some of the biggest takeaways for somebody listening who is interested to get started on their own personal finance journey? Likely, you know, the listeners are either starting a business or wanting to start a business in the online space to travel the world or to just have that time freedom, whether it means traveling or leaving the country a few months out of the year and spending time with family and friends at home, whatever that looks like.
So the book is divided into three sections. The first section looks at self. So it really looks at your mindset about money. I chose to do a deep dive on some of the things that I've seen in the Caribbean, but it doesn't mean that only people from the Caribbean can benefit from it, because it looks a lot at your past and why you have the mindset that you have about money, which most likely was inherited from your parents or your grandparents. And sometimes we don't realize that those things do affect the way you look at money and your decisions and how you pursue your life. So there are things I speak about religious. A lot of times for people who were born into a religious background, you have a certain mindset about money. You have a mindset that anything related to money is covetous and it is not something that you should pursue. You may have family issues, which we don't like to talk about, but you know, there are families where part of the family doesn't necessarily pull the same weight as some of the others in the family. Whether or not we're looking at wealth being passed down and it's not being shared equal. And all of these are things that affect the way people think about money. So I spoke about those in the beginning. And after each chapter, there's a couple of questions that just helps you to look within yourself to see whether or not these are possibilities of things that could be affecting how you look at money. I also use that first part of the book to dive into what I deem to be living loud on a budget. My personal on a budget isn't about flashy cars and expensive clothing or anything like that. To me, it's more about having the time to do the things that you want to do. So I spoke about passion, whereas mine would be travel. You know, other persons aren't necessarily travel, so they would insert what theirs are. I spoke about, you know, taking career breaks. I did a around the world trip. I took a career break. I probably had at least three career breaks at this point. And, you know, not everyone wants to travel full time, but there are some persons who just want to say, can I get 3 months to live? Can I just get 6 months to live? Can I experience what life feels like without a 9-to-5? It doesn't mean that they want to travel around the world permanently like the rest of us, but they just want to be able to say, can I get off the treadmill for a little bit? So I speak about career breaks. I speak about self-fulfillment and pursuing your passion, sometimes with a 9-to-5. You know, the corporate world, this in the Western world, the Western culture, you go to work, you come home, you're so exhausted, you have other things to look at. Your weekend, you have with other activities. You don't get to pursue the things that you want to in life, whether they are hobbies, whether they're charity, whether, you know, it's just a lot to try to consume in the 24 hours that you have. And if you are doing all of that, it means you're probably burning yourself out to do it. So then there's no level of self-care. So I look into what living loud on a budget, what living out loud looks like. And those are the things that come into play. Career breaks, you know, just being able to have the time to do the things you want. But there's a whole trait that goes throughout the whole book, and it is about being authentic. So what the book speaks about is living an authentic life and the way that you're going to be able to build the finances that you want, pursue the life that you want, whether that's the life of a digital nomad, whether that's a life of travel, whether that's a life where you work part-time, whether that's a life where you retire early. It is about being authentic. Number one, being authentic with who you are as a person, being bold and brave enough to say, this is what I want. This doesn't work for me. No, I don't want to have the biggest house because the biggest house comes with the biggest mortgage. I would prefer to have a smaller house and be able to work minimum hours a week or work part-time or retire early, as opposed to buckling under the societal norms where someone says to you, oh, you're an accountant, you're a doctor, you have a degree in whatever. You should have this. You should have this. So it's about being authentic about who you are. And when you are authentic in who you are, then that comes into the authentic financial living. So you are not going to spend your money on the things that doesn't please you, the things that aren't moving you to where you ultimately want to go, or the things that don't give you pleasure. So if you want to embark on a digital nomad type environment and live that type of life, you need to get rid of your debt. So in the second half of the book, what I do then is that I go into the more practical practical knowledge. So we talk about budgeting, how to create a budget, the different shortfalls and the mistakes of creating budget, debt-free living, which is a big thing for me. I'm very big on debt-free living. So I talk about debt-free living, how to manage your credit cards, how to avoid the pitfalls with credit cards and those type of things. And, you know, getting rid of your debt or bringing debt to a manageable size is one of the things that you're going to have to embark on first when you start to live a nomad or a digital nomad type lifestyle. So the book does speak about those type of scenarios, but then we also go into things like wealth, how to build wealth, you know, looking at your house, not necessarily as a house that you live in, but looking at it as your biggest investment and how you're going to manage that investment. And then, of course, one of the things I wanted to also tackle in the book, where I find that a lot of personal finance books don't tackle well enough, is also people think is like, oh, we're either investing money or we're learning to save money. We have to learn how to earn money. So I speak about earning money as a 9-to-5er, how you can increase your paycheck as a 9-to-5er, those other additional things that you should be looking at, whether or not they're perks from your company, like stocks or bonds that you could buy into to create, you know, to earn, to grow your wealth, those type of scenarios. But I also went into self-employment, how to start a business from scratch. I spoke about hustle, side business, and registered companies, the differences in them, how to go about that. And then went into different things like saying to people like, this, if you're still starting from the beginning, this is how you're going to start, et cetera. But I also spoke about passive income. And passive income is one of the things that all of us nomads or digital nomads should have on our radars, because we need that passive income to be coming in. So I looked at different methods of passive incomes and the the advantages and the disadvantages of them, and like the different ones that you can pursue, whether or not they're like digital things you can do, like digital downloads. And, you know, then even in terms of like the book, things that you can copyright, you know, protecting your trademarks. I go into all of that. And
I love everything you just said, I need to say. And this sounds like a very well-rounded finance book. And I love that you talk about earning the money as well, because yes, I agree. I think earning money, so the way that I like to put it is there's only so much money that you can save on. You know, you need rent and you need to buy groceries. There's only so much money that yes, you could get it down to at the end of the month. But the yes, earning
and
potential,
I say that all the, right. And I say that all the time, because there gets to a point in time where you are going to be reducing your quality of life with the more you save. You know, like, yes, we can keep trying to save a penny and save a penny, but there must be a stop as where you're going to say, okay, you know what? This is a quality of life that I want to live.
Exactly, exactly. And I think especially, well, there's so many ways to dive into it. But if you're in the corporate world, if you're working for somebody else, there's so many ways that you can earn higher and earn more. And then, of course, in business, and it may be somewhat more difficult to get started, not always, you know, corporate, that can be difficult to find a job as well. But there is so much more, in my opinion, earning potential within that. So, okay, so one of the first questions that I had when we first started this podcast, and you touched on it, so I want to dive into it a little bit more, is how to build wealth. And you mentioned that this is what you spoke about in your book. So I'm like, this is a perfect segue. Let's talk about this. I love talking about building wealth, but let's talk about building wealth specifically for digital nomads, for global citizens, for those who don't live in their home countries. What does that look like from your perspective?
So growing wealth for me comes into different buckets. In order to grow wealth, you have to have some level of earnings. You have to have some level of money that we're talking about growing wealth. So when I talk about growing wealth, I say you have to earn money. Whether, unless you've inherited money, you have to earn money somehow. So you have to either earn it from your 9-to-5, earn it from your self-employment, earn it from both of them when you have a 9-to-5 and you have self-employed. Whatever the measures are that you're using, you have to earn that money. The second part about it is putting that money in areas where it can grow, right? And I'm going to come back to this because I just want to say what the three factors are. So you have to put that into something that it can grow. And then once you're able to use that money then to grow, the objective is to reinvest it so that it can continue to grow. But you also need to protect that wealth. There's a diagram I've done as well in the book. So back to the top, earning money, what does it look like? Passive income, 9-to-5, self-employment. You can have different buckets of earning wealth. If you're a digital nomad or you're not yet a digital nomad, but you want to embark on that type of scenario, then I think one of your best bets would be passive income. So passive income can be things like where you've invested in a business that somebody else is managing and you're just sitting as a sleeping partner. It could be where you have real estate, like in your home country, but you're not living there anymore. And you'd in turn rent it out, whether it's long-term, short-term, Airbnb. You know, it takes a little bit more effort, but you can also hire someone to look after that part of it while you're traveling, et cetera. And a good thing about real estate in that aspect is that if you're able to rent your property out in your home country, then you're sure that you can practically pay for your rent or wherever you're living from that. And that would be the objective. So while you're still building or you're traveling, then you don't have that pressure of, oh, can I afford to actually live? Because that's where your revenue is going to be coming from. However, let me also say, real estate obviously is one of the most expensive types of investment, and it will take time and money for you to be able to get to that point. But I'm going to say that on two levels. Now, if you're living in US or Canada or those places, you can get a mortgage and you can rent your place out. And doing that is always an option. Of course, you want to make certain that, you know, you get a mortgage for a level that is less than what you can rent the place out for. You may need a little bit of, you may need a little more of experience yourself to be able to do that, to make certain that you're really making a good investment. Now, if you're from the Caribbean, that almost will never happen. It's very, very difficult to even get a mortgage for you to live in your house to begin with. Far less to get mortgage to do investing. And I know in the US you have people who are investing in multiple properties, two, three properties at a time. And that's not something that everybody in the world can actually enjoy. So I would say, even if it's just that one property where you can primarily live in it when you are in your home country, or if you have lived in it in your home country, that's an option that you have. And then of course we're going to things which most of the nomads are doing, the digital space. You have things like digital downloads. You have things like podcasts. If you get sponsors, you have things like your blog. Again, you know, it takes time to build the amount of traffic to these things to your blog that would take before you can embark on AdSense and those type of things. You have your YouTube and all of those other things that, you know, that travelers are doing. You also have things like investing in the stock market. And if you were someone who've worked previously in 9-to-5s, you may have some investment somewhere from your company or, you know, that you bought yourself. But this is also something that you can learn yourself. You know, couple of hours, and I'm not saying it's easy, but a couple of hours you can dedicate to learning how to invest in the stock market. And you don't have to start with a lot. If you have $100, $200, you can start to buy stocks like that and you can build up over time. If you learn the right stocks, then you can buy stocks either that are giving you appreciation, meaning that you don't necessarily want them for to earn a living right now, but more in the future. Or you can embark on the ones that would give you more like a return every quarter or something like that. So, you know, there are options in terms of what you can do as a nomad or as someone who's embarking on a nomad type experience. As it relates to growing wealth, then I would say once you have that revenue to coming in, then you look for the different investments. The different investments we talk about would be like real estate, stocks, business. Those are the primary ones that you would find nomads investing in. Of course, there are other things like people who may invest in art, or people may have gold, or, you know, different types of investments that are more tangible, which wouldn't necessarily fit into the lifestyle of someone who's a nomad, or because you don't want to be traveling around the world and then trying to figure out how do I store expensive art? Because chances are you're going to spend more money than trying to store that in a storage facility than it's really worth the value of. But once you've been able then to earmark and in wealth, when you have like a wealth portfolio, one of the other things that you want to do is look at your allocation. So you can have, as I said, you can have a business, you can have stocks, you can have real estate. You know, there are some practitioners that would say 20% of your portfolio or your worth invested in the stock market is a decent level because it's not too risky. And I don't think necessarily as nomads that we want the riskier investment. We want something that's more stable and not necessarily get rich schemes type scenarios. There are some people who may want to be heavy more on stocks, and they want to do that because they think that they can earn a bigger return while they travel and don't necessarily have a job. You know, they don't have they're not working remotely. They don't have a blog or those type of scenarios. But of course, the risk is more involved there. We know the stock market is going to teeter every 9 to 10 years. I think that's been the pattern in the last few years. And you want to ask yourself, when this happened, am I going to be okay with this happening? So those are the type of things that you want to look at. In terms of what I say about maintaining that wealth, you have to make certain that you cushion that wealth with those things that keep it safe. And whether they are insurance, these are the things, you know, they're different. Like if you have a home, you have to make certain you have good insurance on it. If you're a traveler, you need to make certain that you have insurance yourself. Because if you don't have insurance and you get sick or an accident happen halfway around the world, you can financially ruin yourself in one simple move like that. So you want to make certain that when you're building this wealth and you're investing it and growing it, that you're also protecting yourself and that you're also protecting that wealth so then that you can continue to reinvest. And I'm not saying this lightly. I'm not saying this as if you're going to get up tomorrow morning and you're going to have this all sorted and you're going to have this all put together and you're going to just be snapping your fingers and these things are going to happen overnight. They're not. They're not going to happen overnight, but you have to start somewhere and build from there.
Everything you just said, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. You probably saw me smiling the whole time because I freaking love that people are out there talking about this, and especially women are out there talking about this. In the space that I'm in, there are so many men and they're very knowledgeable, but I find in finance, when it comes to taxes and residencies and the things that I enjoy talking about and where my interests lie, it's very male dominated. So I love that you are talking about it and I love that we're having this conversation. And I hope that anyone listening, regardless of gender, is getting so much out of this. And so, well, this isn't really a question, but just as you were speaking, it got me thinking of how I view my investments versus how everyone views it differently. And everyone has a priority of what they think is best to invest in. And it's so interesting for me. And of course, there's many different ways that this comes into our consciousness. So for me, I have always thought that real estate is such a hassle. I can't own and I won't own real estate in my own home country anymore. But for me to just have it in any country is a hassle because I know I won't live in that country. I know that there is going to be so much management and different things I need to get involved. And for me, the whole reason I moved to Asia in the first place was to geo-arbitrage and to dividend invest. And so for me, investing long-term, not in these, you know, risky day trading or even something I'm going to sell in a few years, hoping to sell it at a gain. Mm-hmm. That's not what I like to do. I like to buy something solid, potentially forever, and get good returns in the form of dividend. Whereas my partner is the total opposite, did not even care about dividend investing. He was always real estate interests me. He's read all the books. He, you know, it's so interesting. And for me, when we have these conversations, I think that it stems from, of course, many places, but it stems from what you see your parents doing and the influences that you have in your life from a young age. And both of our parents have multiple investment properties, but I also saw my parents investing, whereas he saw his parents having real estate and actively managing those real estate properties in his hometown. And then we started talking about, you know, we could go down a whole rabbit hole here, but I won't. We started talking about how, in my opinion, you need some significant form of capital to invest in most real estate options. And unless it's, you know, a REIT or something, and to get some good dividend within the stock market, you need to have some money to get into that game. And so for me, what makes the most sense for anybody starting, anybody listening to this podcast, is building a business or building wealth through a business and having something that you are an expert in, building wealth through that business, and then using that wealth to invest in investments in the stock market and real estate. And like you said, potentially art, crypto, gold, whatever that's going to be for you. But that is the way that I view it. But I find it so interesting to talk to others in the personal finance space because there are a million one different ways to build that wealth. So I'm curious, what is your opinion on this and how do you view that?
I do agree with you that your influences and, you know, what you saw as a child does influence. And which is why I thought about why, which is why I spoke about, you know, that beginning part of the book where you have to look and you see then the way that you view money, investments, et cetera. There is a part of it that comes from your upbringing. And sometimes you don't even know that. So like in the Caribbean context, if you listen to the traditional way, the only thing in life that we're supposed to do is go to school, get an education, get a house. Sorry. Get married, have some children, get a house. There is nothing else to life but go to school, get an education, get married, get some children, and get a house. So people have always judged your level of achievements by whether or not you have a house. And, you know, just recently, as in last week, I did a podcast where this was not the conversation, but I ended up speaking a little bit on renting. And I know the Caribbean context, renting is something that is seen as such a bad financial decision. Whereas in the outside world, you know, people is like, oh, renting is a normal part of your life and is a normal progression. But if you leave your home to go rent in the Caribbean, people are going to talk about you. You're wasting money or watch them, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I have to balance it to say renting does not stop you from owning your own real estate. You're not going to not grow wealth because you're renting. If you're renting without a strategy, then maybe. But just renting, I mean, we all have to live somewhere. I think for me, that whole thing of, and we call it owning a piece of the rock. So regardless of which island you live on, the ultimate objection in life is to own a piece of the rock. To own a piece of land, to own a house. And that's the way the wealth is perceived. That's the way it's perceived, as if you've done well in life, if you own a house. If you don't own a house, there are people who literally will write you off. So if you come from that type of background, then real estate is always something that has been on your mind. It's almost as if they think like your only objective in life is of your only reason to work in life is to own a house. And then for me, because I've also spent a lot of time in the real estate space, mostly primarily with hotels. But because of that, I do have a construction background. So there are jobs, and I know construction is a pain in the backside. It doesn't matter where you're doing it. It is. And I'm living that life right now. I mean, I spent 3 hours of my morning alone dealing with real estate investment, you know, and construction. It is a pain. But at the same time, because I've spent so much time through when we're building a hotel, whether it's 24 beds or 400 beds, and then I see that brand new spanking ultra luxury hotel and the guest walks in and you see everything and it's so nice and shiny, and you almost forget the pain it took to get there. So while I know that real estate is one of those things that could be difficult to get in, it's a pain in the backside to deal with, and it's tough in terms of getting it to market, I also have been on the other end of it. So I know what it looks like as an investment. And I know that it's one of the strongest investments that you will have. And I think pretty much, and I think it, and it's across the board in every location, it is one of those investments that hold its own. The stock market is going to tank at some point in time. We're going to have currencies that, and when I say currencies, I mean cryptocurrencies, they disappear, they do whatever. You can have a business. Business can be doing well for a number of years, but at some point in time, you have to keep reinventing that business. You have to keep on top of the market. If not, you're going to lose that. You can have issues with business part. You know, real estate is one of those things that if you continue to, you know, just maintain the property here and there, it is one of those things that will the test of time. Now, the objective to it is how do you get away from the pain of owning it or the work of owning it and just kind of sit at the end. And I mean, as I said, there are property managers who can do most of it for you. Of course, they come at a cost, but that is one of the easiest way to avoid. And if you look at it long term, then you're, or, you know, what are the other aspects of it? Whereas I just peep in on it every couple of months or once a year or whatever, because I know I want to own this long term. But we also have, because you invest in real estate, doesn't mean that you have to hold it for life. You can invest in a real estate, you can own it for a couple of years, you can be traveling, living somewhere else, and then you can say, okay, well, you know what? It's time for me to put this on the market and get back my investment out of it and then allocate it to somewhere else. And that whole thing then of being in your home country, and this was an area that I wanted to touch on, but I didn't touch on earlier, the whole aspect of your home country comes into play when you're starting to look at where you can own your own, where you can earn your own your wealth, own your wealth. Because not every country that I've lived in as a foreigner or as an expat will allow me to own real estate. You know, I've just spent 6 years living in Bermuda as an expat, but as a foreigner, I can't invest in real estate. So while you're earning that money, you still need to invest that money somewhere. And if you're a nomad and you're traveling, then sometimes based on the country that you're sitting in, or maybe not even just the country, but there may be other circumstances, it limits you in terms of where you can put your investment. Sometimes that's what, not for everyone. For some people, maybe the best option, because you may be saying, okay, I have this amount of funds that I need to invest somewhere. Where does it suit me best? I remember many years ago, I saw an article and it was speaking on building wealth as a nomad. Well, I don't think it said nomad, because at that time we weren't talking about nomads or digital nomads or whatever. But it basically said, you know, building wealth as somebody who lives outside of your country. And one of the things that, you know, the writer was suggesting is that you should have a real estate investment, or you should have your real estate investment in an area where you have a passport to match. And I had forgotten about that article for a long time, but when COVID hit and I saw what was happening around me, because what I saw was hotels were closed. At the time, I myself had gotten out of hospitality just the year before. So, you know, for me, I was very thankful for that. But you have persons who lived in countries as expats for 10 years, 12 years, as much as 20 years. But when the hotels closed, they sent them home. Home to countries that they've not been in 10, 15, 20 years, that their children have never been to. And they had to go home because the only passport that they had was for that country. And it got me to really thinking about that article that I saw many years ago, where, you know, if it got to that point where, hey, we are in an emergency and this is a passport that you have, how long can I stay in XY country? I know with something like COVID, you know, there were countries that were allowing people to stay longer, et cetera. But what if you're living in a country where you can only spend 3 months at a time, 6 months at a time, where you haven't yet been able to secure, like, let's say, a resident permit for like a year or whatever, then what happens then? And those are the type of things where I call what if scenarios. These are things that as a corporate accountant that I would have to look at on a daily basis in terms of forecasting. And that's also some of the knowledge that I also bring to my private clients when I do personal finance now for myself. Like, let's build some what if scenarios. What if this were to happen? How do you counter this? How do you build your wealth? How do you build your money? How do you build your life to be able to manage this? What if one of you got sick? What, you know, those are just the scenarios that you have to start to look at, especially when you're living a nomadic life.
And I can so resonate that with that because it's so stressful to even still think about it. It was like 3 years ago. I got locked out of my country of residence when COVID happened. And even though I was a resident, because I wasn't a citizen, I was not able to go back to my life in that country. Mm-hmm. And it was a very difficult, 10 months of having to stay in a country where I didn't want to be in, but because it was one of the passports that I had. But anyway, that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, I do find the topic, and you have shared so much. We could dive into everything for hours on end still, but I find the topics of how to build wealth and investing and what that looks like, especially when you are living what I like to call a global citizen lifestyle, and you're building something that is outside of your home country, or like me, I can't invest in my, and I would never want to, but in the country where I hold my first passport, because I would then be a resident there. And that is not the system that I have set up for myself. So it's very interesting to dive into kind of all of these nuances and the what if situations. And because you always have to be prepared, especially as a global citizen, when we are citizens of the world and don't identify with one or two countries or whatever that may look like, you have to think about these what if that, we never thought a pandemic would happen, but it did. And hopefully it won't again in our lifetime, but you never know what will happen. So we have touched on so much good information here. To wrap up, is there anything you think is important to note within this conversation that we have not talked about yet?
No, I'll just say an extension to that same thing we talk about in terms of growing wealth as a nomad, etc. And I know that you've mentioned this before, and I do know that you've had guests on who've spoken about this in terms of taxes and where am I domiciled and under what criteria based on my passport. And not everybody's country has the same laws. Like I know, like a lot of Canadians, they have to sell their homes and whatever just to be able to break ties with their countries, which is not necessarily something that a Barbadian would have to do. But the Barbados law does say that they are allowed to take taxes on your money wherever you earn it in the world, as long as it's a country that doesn't have a tax rebate. So you have to, not tax rebate, a tax treaty agreement.
Tax treaty, yeah.
So you have to keep yourself familiar with which countries have tax treaty agreements and things like that. And do you still have to file taxes in your home country? And then one of the ones that I'm finding it most difficult now, as I move from the life of an expat into more the life of a nomad, is the banking system. It's tough everywhere. And it's not designed for nomads. Even in terms of how do I explain to you that I kind of sort of have an address, but don't really have an address. And the more compliance that they're trying to bring to the world of banking, the more struggle it leads for us nomadic persons. And it is hard. So, that's just an extension of what I would want to add to the conversation to finish off, the growing the wealth and investing. And of course, once you start to talk about growing wealth, investing, we have to talk about taxes, because we don't get to just drop off the face of the earth and not pay taxes somewhere to someone. And then just pretty much, to sum up everything, building an authentic life for yourself, building the life that makes you happy, the life that you want to go after, establishing that it will not look like the next person's own. And my global citizen / nomadic type life will not look like yours. Yours will not look like mine. And, we have different objectives in life. We have different things that make us unique in who we are and what we want to pursue. We come from different countries. The passport that we hold will sometimes determine what we can do and what we can't do. In terms of the ease, not necessarily that it's not something that you can embark on. It means it's not necessarily so easy. And I've had a lot of that experience where, especially when I get to the other side of the world, you know, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and Asia, where my British counterparts will apply online for a visa. And I have to go sit in the embassy for 3-4 hours for them to probably tell me no. You know, and these are just factors of that what we have to look at. So it's not necessarily to think that the lifestyle we're building will look like another person's own. And what I always try to instill in persons from a personal finance perspective, it is personal. At the end of the day, it is you. It is your version. It is about being authentic. It is about making certain that you earn that money in the way that you want to earn it, and that you earn that money in a way that you can then use it to pursue the things of life that you want to. You do not have to spend your money in ways of which society deems that you should be spending your money on. That is, you know, that is not, that has gone out with the wind. That's not where we are at anymore. We do have the options in life now to be able to just pursue the lifestyle that we want. And we can pursue that lifestyle through authentic financial living. And just one other thing I want to sum up. We spoke about investing in real estate by owning a business, but I'm going to also say we can own real estate by our 9-to-5s. And that is what I did. And it's not something that is not, you know, achievable, or it is not something that people should think like, oh, there is no way that this can ever happen. You can spend a few years, you can run that 9-to-5, you can build your earnings, and you can invest in real estate from there to embark on whatever other options you want to do and whatever lifestyle that you want to do. You know, there are different options.
Yeah, I love that. There are options for literally everyone based on whatever your interest is and whatever direction, like we said, you want to design your lifestyle in. So where can people find you online and find your book?
So I can be found on my website, tanjagittins.com. Also, livingloudonabudget.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Tanja Gittins, and that's T-A-N-J-A. I do a lot of my postings on LinkedIn as well, more meatier stuff. And I do also have some blog articles as well on livingloudonabudget.com. You can also find me on Instagram, livingloudonabudget. And book Living Loud on a Budget, but I don't actually engage on Facebook. I just use it for other purposes to direct you to elsewhere. The book is available on Amazon. It's on all the Amazons, Canada, whatever. But I also do have a book location on Living Loud on a Budget. So if you go to Living Loud on a Budget, you can see book location, and it gives you all the links to all the different opportunities in which you can buy the book. Because for persons who like to read printed copy, regardless of where you are in the world, you pretty much can order a printed copy, whether it's Japan, Italy, Denmark. There are a variety of countries where you can actually order a printed copy if you don't want to go to Kindle or more ebook types.
You've just listened to the Work, Wealth, and Travel podcast. If anything from this episode resonated with you, I would appreciate if you share this podcast on your socials. And of course, be sure to tag me. And don't forget to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining me on this global citizen journey, and I'll see you in the next episode.